Welcome to Fangs and Bangs, your one-way ticket into the realm of paranormal and fantasy romance novels. Today's episode is about Bella meeting her vampire boyfriend's vampire family for the first time, and the history of Carlo. So sit back, relax, because we prepared Italiano for you. Let's bang on episode 9 of Fangs and Bangs. So first of all, we want to welcome everybody back. If you are an active listener and you've been listening to our podcast weekly, you might realize that we've been gone for, it's only been like 4 months, a quarter of the year.
Has it been 4 months now?
Oh, yeah, because our last episode was like November 29th or something.
You know, you didn't have to say a quarter of a year like that, though.
Basically, Christmas happened and then January happened and then February happened and here it is March, which is almost over. So time just got away from us. Life got a little hectic, a little busy, but we're back and we have our schedule set up. So we're going to be recording weekly again. I do apologize, but for those that are just discovering our podcast, there's no time slip for you at all. You probably binged all of these.
Way to go. You did it.
Are we binge worthy? I don't know.
I hope we're binge worthy.
Who can put up with that? This is what, episode 9 and they're like 2 hours apiece. You've done it with 18 hours of us.
You
I'm so sorry.
Maybe when they go to sleep to us or something.
Yeah.
Because 8 hours of sleep, yeah. That's a 2, 4, 6, 8. That's 4 episodes. So
that's what I want to do. Go to sleep to
that's
us. Maybe they're like Edward and they just sit.
I listen to us on the drive, but because then I get to pretend I'm talking to my friends.
So there's been some big news since the last time we spoke. We wanted to make a fan cast, which I still think we should do. I still think we should build that fan cast for the series.
We still
need to, yes. But there was a TV series that was announced for Twilight. We were going to make a fan cast, what celebrities we thought were going to be who. And then they dropped the bomb that it's going to be animated.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I'm super excited for that. For those that don't know, I have an animation background. So that's awesome.
I'm just pro animation. I think a lot of these books, not even just this one, but future books we talk about too, really it's only the only format I can see them working well and being enjoyed by a wider audience, not just the readers.
Yeah, absolutely. Like A Court of Thorn and Roses should be animated. That should not be live action.
Yeah, and I mean, some things like, let's just say Game of Thrones, just because that's a fantasy that's got some pretty like magic and stuff like that. But it's not too much magic. I think when there's lots of magic involved, I think it can get cheesy. And I still haven't watched Discovery of Witches. Now that we're restarting this, I actually probably will. I've heard it's kind of cheesy and I have to imagine it's because of the magic that's used.
Maybe. I really liked it. I watched it a long time ago though, so I might have to rewatch it too. I like a mixture. So like The Witcher obviously is live action, but they also have like the prequel, which is an animation. And I think it did really well. And I think they work together. Like it's not like, oh, that's the cartoon. And then this is the live action. Like it's one story. And I think it worked really well together. I don't know. We just have to find that balance. But we're super excited for the animation. Hopefully that comes out sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without further ado, let's just get forward. So the last time we spoke about how Edward used to watch Bella in her sleep. We got to the point where he's basically staying the night at her house. Well, she always wakes up and he's gone.
But I should say, stays the night at her house knowingly.
Yeah.
This is like the first time she kind of knows too, right?
Yeah. This is the first time she knew that he's like, he watches her sleep.
Like the whole time.
So romantic.
I know. And she takes it so romantic, but it's not, guys.
That's like the curse of being a teenager. It's just there's a lot of things that are red flags. And as a teenager, you're like, that's so romantic.
I wanted a boy to stay in the night at my house like this so bad. So, yeah.
yeah.
But as an adult, I'm like, that's really odd.
There's so many things. Youth. What's the phrase for it? Like the youngest way to sit on the youth or whatever that phrase is. And it's really true. Like you just don't have the maturity to understand what's dangerous, what's a person respecting you and your boundaries and what's not.
Right.
You just don't have that. And you don't have the experience to get that. And unfortunately, you have to make those experiences. And so you're just in this weird position. That's what, when I was a high school teacher, it's just so rough because I was like, it's not good for you. And I have no way to prove this to you.
Right.
The only thing is I can just tell you, and I can tell you instances where something like this has happened, whether it's like drugs, relationship, sex, right. whatever the teenagers were dealing with at the time. And it's like, God, the only way that you can experience this is either by simulation, like seeing it through a movie or even seeing it through a friend or a family member, or experiencing it yourself. Like, yeah, I know you're not going to listen to me, this 30-year-old adult who's like, oh, trust me. Like, they're not right. going to.
Well, as My Chemical Romance said, teenagers scared the living shit on me. And I think about that daily, literally. Just about what you say, because you're right. The best you can do is be like, hey, you can't do this because of this, and it's really hard on your life, and blah, 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 blah. And all they hear is like, wah, 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 wah.
Right.
You know?
And you know what you're talking about.
And you just, there's no, they just literally have to learn everything the hard way. It's like when you tell toddlers things are hot, not to touch them, and they do because they don't really know what that means. They don't know what hot yeah. means. They don't know what a burning feeling on your hand means. And then they do it and they're like, wow, that sucked and I'm never going to do it again. But you can tell them all day long, but the likeliness is that they'll never really understand it until they do it. And
they're going to have to touch it.
Teenagers are just a bigger version of that, but with scarier things. Burning your hand on the stove is temporary and not something that will affect you for the rest of your life. Having children maybe too young, or drugs, or alcohol, or just any life decisions at that age, they could affect you later on in life, you know? So it can be kind of terrifying for us as old ass bitches, I guess. But anyway, so here's Edward and Bella, just Edward stuck in this permanent, what we have to assume is stuck in this mental,
for us to be comfortable with this story.
We have to think that Edward just is stuck thinking like a 17-year-old boy and has a problem making decisions because his frontal lobe never formed.
We ended the last chapter. Essentially, he's in Bella's room and Bella says, please stay the night and don't leave in the morning. And he's like, okay, I won't. This is the night where he actually stays. She wakes up and she's absolutely elated that he stayed overnight. She can't believe that he did. And we get to a point where Edward's like, okay, breakfast time, and Bella does this stupid thing where she covers her neck and she's like, oh no, not me. And he's like, no, I mean human breakfast. And she's somewhat afraid that she offended him, but overall, either he got over it or he understood the joke. And it's just funny because this is the emotion we talk about, where Bella showed a lot more comedy, a lot more personality in the book than she did in the film.
Right.
So I can never see Kristen Stewart Bella doing this.
Right. Like, pretending to, like, oh, no, you're going to eat me. And then, like, yeah. And yeah. She even says, because Edward's like, I didn't mean that. And she's like, you said I was a bad actress. Like, so obviously she does it convincingly enough that she's right. like, and you said I was a bad actress. So I can't imagine Kristen Stewart doing it. I just can't.
This is something I marked in my book several times. Let me pull up exactly what I'm talking about. One, it's revealed to us that Bella says, I love you, to Edward in her sleep. That's the very first, I love you.
Right.
And Edward brings that up, and she's worried about other things that she says in her sleep as well. But Edward does this thing where he lies all the time about never leaving Bella. But he will need some explanation for why I'm around here so much. I don't want Chief Swan getting a restraining order put on me. Will you be? I asked, suddenly anxious. Will you really be here? And he goes, as long as you want me. That's not fucking true, because New Moon exists. The entirety right. of New Moon exists. 98% of New Moon exists.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20, Edward, I guess.
And he says that he'll never leave. I have the word liar marked in here so many times when he says he's never going to leave her. He's never going to leave her.
Your book is just like, liar, liar.
Yeah, liar, liar. I'm like that scene from Legally Blonde. She's eating her chocolate. She's like, liar, throwing yeah. the chocolates at the TV. How I feel.
So fucking.
So I just get really frustrated with that. Like, I'm never going to leave you. Like, shut up. Shut up. At this point, Edward feels it's probably important to introduce him as the boyfriend to Charlie at some point in time. He's like, if I'm hanging out here a lot, then you're going to have to tell him that I'm your boyfriend. Otherwise, there's just this weird dude hanging out with you, which is also true. He's also a weird dude that's just always hanging out with her.
Right. Both are true.
Both can be true at the same time. But tonight's the big night where Bella's going to finally meet Edward's family, which, to be honest, she's met all of them except for Esme, right?
Yes, at this point, yes.
Yeah, Carlisle's her doctor. She goes to school with the others.
She's only really conversations with him. Talked to Carlisle and Alice.
True.
At this point, Carlisle probably the most, but yeah, she hasn't met Esme at all. But, well, I mean, I could go on about Esme, but maybe we should wait until we meet her.
Yeah. The family, when they're talking about like the family, one of the funny concepts I think is that they can't keep secrets because Alice knows all. It's just, I think of that in my own family. Like if one person knew everything and we wouldn't be able to keep secrets, like I just feel it's very important for people to be able to keep minor secrets.
Especially within a family dynamic.
Yeah.
Not that you need to keep secrets from your family, but some things need to be private within families and that's okay.
Well, and some things need to be processed before it becomes public, you know what I mean? You when you're sitting here, you're like, I hate my mom. And I'm sure some kids, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but go as far like, I wish my mom was dead, I wish she died. Like hearing that from like your kids, like knowledge, like knowing these things, you know what I mean? It would not be something that you'd want to hear. They need to process that, work themselves through, and realize that they're overreacting or they're being dramatic or whatever, you know. Meanwhile, you got all your secrets, like, yeah, he wished that his mom would die. Like, bro, don't tell her that. That's like literally like a weak moment of my conscience. Like,
right.
And, you know, the funny thing, too, is like Edward also, you can't keep secrets around him either because he can he hear his own siblings' thoughts?
Edward?
Yeah.
Can he hear his own siblings' thoughts?
Yeah. He can hear everybody's but Bella's, right?
Yeah. So it's funny that it says there's no secrets from Alice because like, There's no secrets from Edward either. And if anything, Alice's can change. Like, right. I can be like, I'm going to go get McDonald's. And Alice could be predicting that. But maybe on the way there, I'm like, you know what? Actually, Wendy sounds good or something. I don't know. And then that would also change. So, like, I guess that would, her vision would change too. But, like, Edward's getting, like, live updates if he was, like, within listening distance of me.
Right. Actively.
Like, me going also, like, why? About it.
Why is she a snitch? You know, like, we don't have any secrets because Alice knows everything. She doesn't have to tell everybody everything. Like, the secret can be between me and Alice.
Yeah, why are you tattling, Alice?
Yeah, a little fucked up.
Yeah. But, I mean, but is Edward also tattling? Or do people just, like, have communication? I guess it just depends on how big his mind reading goes. Because, like, can he only read my thoughts if I'm thinking it? You know? Like,
right.
You know, because there's, like, almost, like, passive thoughts or something like
that. I was literally about to say, yeah, like, passive.
Like, does he know my political stances only when because I'm thinking of them? Like, if he were to be like, what's your politics? I would all of a sudden start thinking about that. And he'd be like, okay, this is, like, what she believes in or something like that. Or can, I don't know. It's very interesting.
I feel like it's like, the inner monologue thing. And for those people that don't have inner monologues, then I don't know if Edward's going to hear them.
Right.
But in this instance, I assume, you know, this was written 19 years ago, oof, right? Rough. And at this point, I think it's a fairly new discovery, at least like locally to the modern people, that some people don't have inner monologues.
Yeah, I think don't
that's
know.
Kind of a new
Stephanie
discovery.
Myers would have really like, would she change the, does that make Edward less powerful? And would she like adjust to that if she were to rewrite this like
right
now? Because there's some people who can't even picture the apple. So he found Bella by going in people's minds and seeing if they saw her. But like, does that.
Right. And some people can't see.
Does that change? Yeah. Because some people can't picture an apple in their head, but some people can.
You know, that's like a trope among any storytelling, like movies and books and whatever. Like they don't ever take that into account. It's like, yeah, I read his mind and I read the things that he was saying in his brain. And like their brain's always saying all this crazy shit, you know, even though our brains aren't necessarily like that sometimes.
Right. Even as someone with inner monologue and I can picture the full apple and with a very active imagination, honestly, I don't know if he could get like a full sentence out of my thought process, really. Like if that's what it's relying on, it's probably a lot like blah, 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 going to McDonald's, blah, 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 recording with Mac. Like it's probably a lot of like murmuring in between and like caveman speak more like, but like maybe he can just get the vibes off your brain too. I don't know.
Yeah.
An interesting thought as we move forward.
We need more science.
We need more science in our fictional vampire romance.
To move forward, Bella walks, she goes into the bathroom, she has a human moment, and she comes out, and she goes, okay, now I'm decent. You wanted to talk about this, where Bella is actually indecent.
Fucking indecent. Edward doesn't say fucking, but I mean, hold on. Utterly indecent is his words. I had a fine. This is one of those classic Mormon fashion moments, guys. Because I don't even know if this was a cool outfit with the time. Some of her outfits, I do have to admit, to some degree, we have to admit their outfits that at the time were cool. I mean, this was the time where people were wearing business casual to the clubs. So We have to keep that in mind. But Bella is wearing a khaki knee-length skirt.
Hell yeah.
Khaki colored. It just says khaki colored, but you have to imagine it's those actual khaki skirts that used to be out during the time that had, like, pockets. Like cargo shorts kind of did.
I'm imagining, like, corduroy, too, for some reason.
Ugh, that's even worse. I hate corduroy. Anyway, and then she's wearing a blue blouse that she has worn before in front of Edward and that he has complimented. I think in my head, I never read knee length when I was younger. I read it as, like, I thought khaki, like, miniskirt, because khaki miniskirts probably were more of a thing and more fashion forward at the time. But Stephanie Myers is a Mormon woman. You can't wear miniskirts. And even as a Mormon child reading, though, I was like, oh, this is, like, thigh length, you know, at the very most. That's how I read it. And then I read it just kind of as, like, almost like a baseball tee. Because those are really cool, the, like, three-quarter sleeve scoop neck.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of how I pictured it being younger. And that's kind of a cute little outfit. Because she says it's casual, but, like, still kind of, like, a little, not, like, dressy. But, you know, a little bit nicer for meeting the parents. But this is a knee-length skirt. And she's wearing, like, one of those blouses that are, like, I think it's an eyelet blouse, like, on the top. And it's, like, goes up to her neck. And it's just, it's bad, guys. You can literally just Google it, because people make, like, fake outfits of this fashion. One. Because they're like, this is the thing that Edward said she was utterly indecent in.
Yeah. He's, like, feral over this, too. He's like, oh, my God. She's so hot.
Oh, and then she puts her hair in a high ponytail. And then,
hot damn.
Yeah. And so she goes, he steadied me, because she was coming down the stairs, holding me a careful distance away for a few seconds before suddenly pulling me closer. Like, he's so overwhelmed. This person who is just like yesterday, I think now, or the day before, has been able to pull Bella close to him without wanting to eat her. It's like, oh my gosh, I must have her so close. And then he says, the other thing I want to mention
is blue and khaki is the Walmart uniform color. So that gives me PTSD for my own.
Yeah, she looks like a Walmart employee. But that's the thing. That's what she looks like. Like, she's about to go work at Walmart, not like.
Well, and that's literally the dress code. Well, not anymore. They've changed things. But back then, you can have a blue t-shirt of almost any size, style. It just had to cover your breasts. And then you could have a khaki skirt, but it had to be knee length or longer.
Disgusting.
Yeah, so it's just funny. I'm like, she's literally describing a Walmart uniform, which when I first read this, I did not work at Walmart and I never even considered that. I was like, oh, cool. I don't know. I don't know what outfit I put her in my head. I just like, okay, obviously he's going feral over it. So she's hot for some reason. And so I just made up some hot outfit in my head.
So he says she's really tempting. This is also just a little aside. Oh, wait, no, actually, this is part of our notes, too. He's so tempted by her, he then gives her a kiss, but he tilted his head slowly and touched his cool lips to mine for a second time, very carefully, parting them slightly, and then I collapsed. She fucking faints. The faintest little tiny kiss.
So, like, as a teenager, that's, like, so cool to me. Like, I want a boyfriend whose kiss makes me faint. Like, I'm so enamored. I guess. So in love. You know what I mean? And now I'm like, that's so fucking stupid. Like, you faint because he kissed you? Shut up.
Then he's like, do you feel sick? What's wrong? And she's just like, you made me faint. And he's like, oh, what am I going to do with you? And they kind of like giggle about it. And you're like, this is fucking weird.
Bella. Bam, 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 bam. He's got like his hands on his hips and he like looks at the camera.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's literally just play Seinfeld music. Did I do that? Bella over here fucking just being stupid.
That's what they should have done with the series. They should have made it a sitcom.
Oh my gosh. This would be so good as a sitcom.
Okay. So they end up taking her. He takes her out to the house. And, you know, the Cullens have made vast amounts of wealth over the years.
I mean, he's been a doctor pretty much since.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about his background a little bit. But yeah, he's been in the medical profession for quite some time.
Right. I just saw the post today. It's an old one, but it's like, you know, how did the Cullens become so rich? Like, where do they make their money? What jobs do they have? One, they forgot that Carlisle's a doctor, I guess. And two, the comment below is like, if I've been alive for hundreds of years and I'm still broke, dude, just walk out into the sun. Like,
just walk out into the sun. Amen. Which
obviously doesn't work for Twilight vampires, but yeah, no, there's no point. If you're broke for like 500 years, can't figure it out.
I mean,
forget it.
You always said that youth was wasted on the young, but I think the reverse of that saying is money is wasted on the old, or something like that. And I believe that too, because I think you start to kind of figure it out, but then by the time you're really like, I could be dumb with my money kind of money, you're probably like 60, 70, 80. And I think a lot of older people, at least that I know, travel and use that money and stuff like that. But like at a certain point, you have to be like, well, I'm going to live forever. I have to make investments or like, you know, oh, what's this company called Apple? Let's invest in that. That would just be funny. And then like, because like you could probably invest in everything. And then if some flop, some flop. But if some take off, you're like, well, I'm rich now. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, you're just going to keep making money too, especially as a doctor.
And if you have Alice, she had a predicted Facebook coming up and like stuff like that.
Well, and just the vast amount of knowledge that you gain over time, you're just going to be able to do something that is very productive and very, like, makes a lot of money. You're just going to, eventually. You're like, yeah, well, I learned everything about neuroscience, so yeah, I went to the university and now I...
Yeah.
Like,
I believe, you know, Edward practices medicine sometimes, too. He does not, like, all the time, but he does, I think, have his doctorates and is a doctor. He just doesn't always practice because is 17, so I think Carlisle is, like, what, 23? So he pulls it off a little bit more than Edward, but I don't know. I'm not gonna lie. I've had some doctors come in and I'm like, why is this 12-year-old working on me? And I've never once thought about Twilight, but you know what? From now on, I am. Next time there's a 12-year-old, I'm gonna be like, all right, Carlisle.
All right,
like,
he's just a vampire,
I guess. I'm just gonna accept it and be like, oh, cool. He knows what he's doing. I'm so glad that you don't drink human blood and decided to perform medical miracles. I don't know. Anyway, back to the thing.
Well, so when they get out to the house, I mean, in the movie, we have this beautiful, I don't know what, it's like a modern, I don't know the design.
It's even modern from when the movie was made, like...
Yeah.
This house is still being built like this around my house. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that was like a sign of rich people. Because remember the movie When a Stranger Calls, 2006, I think is when it came out. She went to this rich people home and it was very much built like that, where you just have the wooden thing with a lot of glass windows. Like, that's just a sign of extreme wealth during this time. And I mean, it's still a sign of extreme wealth.
Yeah, windows, but people are building expensive. Bigger. Just windows alone. Anytime someone's got more than like four windows, I'm like, damn. They got money.
He's so rich. But when Stephanie Meyer explains the house, she describes it. How does she describe it?
I think she literally says it's a plantation home. They come through the forest for 6 years. So it's also more protected by trees than it is. I guess in the movie, they do a good job like covering it with trees.
Yeah.
The house was timeless, graceful, and probably 100 years old. It was painted a soft, faded white, 3 stories tall, rectangular, and well-proportioned. The windows and doors were either part of the original structure or a perfect restoration. I could hear the river by blah, 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 blah. And it just kind of goes on. So I don't think it ever says specifically in the book, but I think it's one of those things that Stephanie Myers, it says like on her website or something. I found it somewhere before we made these notes.
Well, what you described is perfectly a plantation house, like rectangular, symmetrical. They're usually white.
Yeah.
Which is so funny because the way that you're also describing this house is not your typical Pacific Northwest housing.
Yes. Like, you don't which have is that funny because she says, oh, it was restored. But you're like, were they building plantation houses in like the rainiest place ever in the West?
The West was also settled during the Civil War. And so most of the northern states in the West were settled in the name of the Union, which did not have slaves necessarily. And so that's one of the things moving out east is something I realize is there's a lot of rich history in slavery. And everywhere you go is like, oh, slaves used to live here. And you just get this like, oh, my God, like there's this feeling. And I realized being in Nevada, we had the Chinese people working on the railroads and they were more or less slaves, but not to the same capacity. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that people weren't poorly treated out west, but it just doesn't have the integral woven of slavery into its history
as
much as out east does.
Right.
You know what I mean? So to come across a house in the Pacific Northwest and be like, this is a plantation home, and it's like, for what? Like,
yeah, what? Why do you... What did Jasper tell you?
Did Jasper build this house? Like,
it really is just... I don't know. I think... I mean, she's an Arizona girl, so maybe she just has this, like, love for a plantation home. And don't get me wrong, if you guys haven't seen a plantation home, like, look it up. They're beautiful homes. Yeah, like,
they are beautiful.
I think they're the ideal. I don't want to say ideal. I think they're just like the, if someone's like, picture a big beautiful house, you're probably gonna picture it and you probably don't even notice because it's very classic, like square, nice little windows and you know, that usually are kind of like picturesque windows with the little, I think they're literally called picture windows with the little crossing checkered wood across the windows and stuff with like little curtains and little like storm flaps and stuff. Usually like I'm the one in our notes, we put one in our notes to like remind us, has a red door, but that's also really classic, is to have like the all white house, but then have like a colored door, typically red. I think that's like the house that kids draw, just not as well, obviously, but like, and then like the big covered wraparound porch, like who doesn't want that? You know, I mean, they're gorgeous homes. So I think maybe Stephanie Meyer's, she has this love for the South, but it comes not across well.
I mean, obviously with Jasper's history and stuff, like,
And I mean, to some degree, she had to have also loved history, because she's, I mean, soon we'll talk about it here in a second, like, talks about Carlisle and what century he was living in, stuff like that. She had to do some basic looking up of history to kind of, like, make sure this all made sense and stuff. So I think she just kind of has this love for like the history and the classic of it all, but then you then she jams it and she's like, but I love the Pacific Northwest, so I'm gonna have them have a plantation home. And maybe they just came from the South and were like, let's build this. Like,
well, the other thing I was gonna mention too is that a Southern plantation home is very specific to Interview with a Vampire, which set a lot of precedent for vampire culture, pop culture. And so, I mean, it might even be reflectant to that, whether she's aware of it or not aware of it. She might just be like, vampires live in plantation homes, because Louise, he literally owned a plantation home. He owned a plantation. That's the other thing, too, is she's a little bit older, and romanticizing the South was very common when I was a little kid. Even when I was, like, in high school, like, romanticizing the South. And it's so funny how much things have changed. I just watched a movie called Totally Killer on Amazon. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but she, it's the girl that plays Sabrina from the Netflix series.
Yeah.
And she ends up going back in time to the 1980s, and she's, like, trying to stop her mom's murder and stuff. And that happening, she, there's just so much things that are being said, and, like, all the bullying that's going on, and all of the, like, non-progressive, the non-PC thing. She's like, oh my god, you can't say that. Like, how are you so popular if you're this horrible?
Yeah.
I mean, she, it's just weird the dynamic of, you know, how things have changed so much. Right. And so I'm not excusing anything or like that, but it could be possible that Stephanie Meyer is just one of those older people that are romanticizing the South, just like most people did during that time.
I will also say in the book, it says that it is like covered by six giant, I don't think it says specifically redwood, but it says big towering trees like surround it. So it's completely shaded at all times, no matter where like the sun is, which very smart for vampires, obviously. But a plantation home kind of makes sense for a vampire too. They do not have the windows that the Twilight House does. Because I will say, I think the Twilight House in the movie, way cooler. I kind of dig its vibe. You would think like, yeah, that's what they would want. You would want that if you had fuck you, I'm a vampire money.
Right.
But plantation homes do make more sense. Their windows are not giant. They're right next to each other, but they're pretty covered, and they're covered by a porch typically also. So it's really like you're never going to have a chance of someone like walking up to like deliver the mail and happen to see you glittering.
Right.
I mean,
well, they do mention though that the house is very bright. Like there's a lot of light that comes into it. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where.
I guess I just imagine that these are more curtainable than the ones in the movie. The ones in the movie don't look like they have like the big curtains or anything like that. And I guess it's not really necessary because of the trees. It's just like, I guess you don't really need that. So they're kind of just covered at all times. And honestly, if I'm their kind of vampire, I would do the windows, because they're already out in the boonies anyway. So
So moving forward from the architecture of the home.
From the architecture. Hey, why do we have eight episodes about Twilight? How could this happen?
We talk about everything. We're getting to the nitty gritty.
It's just funny, guys, because before we record, Meg and I are like, we're gonna shorten these, and then our next books that we do, we're gonna like cover in like three episodes, and like,
yeah, we're gonna cover a whole book in a single episode. So,
and then we do this, and episodes? I'm like, I'm gonna have less to say about Discovery of Witches. I doubt it.
Oh god.
Anyway,
Ashlyn, you were a team Alice since day one. Explain to us what's going on with Alice.
Did I make this? No, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you did, because I'm not team Alice.
You're not.
I mean, she's fine.
I think
she exists.
I think she is like everything in the movie, she's not done well. She's just kind of like, well, her and Jasper are both creepy kind of in the movie, actually. They're both like stare a little bit too much. Alice kind of gets away with it because she's seeing the future. So I get that when you want to portray that as a live actor, once again, animated is different. You can kind of pull it off a little bit more dramatic in animation without it being choogy.
Without being like That's So Raven where she just scan there and go.
And so I think they were going the That's So Raven route, but they were trying to dumb it down where she's like, her eyes kind of widen and like she's looking at people but not really looking at them. And you're like, okay. So I think they did that well because you have to portray that to some degree. But she comes in, obviously Bella is really nervous about meeting everyone. And I think she does meet Esme technically. Esme and Colin, Dr. Colin, I should say, first. But Alice comes in. She's really sincere. She's really warm to Bella. She's like, it's so nice to know you. Bella also really, I mean, they always describe Rosalie as like hot peak hot girl, but she describes Alice as like Snow White in the flesh, just like this fairy tale looking princess and stuff. And so I just kind of am like, I don't know, Alice is just always instantly sincere, and I think she's the reason sometimes Bella passes the Bechdel test, because sometimes she talks to Bella about fashion and stuff like that. She's like, the only reason this book passes. And she just wants to like genuinely be Bella's friends, whether Edward's involved or not. And so I kind of like that about her. I don't know. I'm Team Alice. I can't remember why I have Team Alice day one.
It's capitalized. I figured you'd know it deep into.
I don't know why I have it all highlighted and stuff. But I usually underline it when I make a note. So that's why I'm like, I made that note. I do not remember. But it's just, oh, and you know what? It's coming back to me as I'm reading it. I think some of it is because she is like, one, instantly warm and nice to Bella. And two, she is also team, like, Bella's just going to turn into a vampire anyway. Just fucking get it over with.
Oh, right. Because she sees that future for her.
Yes. And Edward knows she has seen that future. It's like the one fight they've had since they've met each other as siblings. And, you know, it's a continuous thing. But it's like, he knows how accurate her things are. So like, I don't know. Alice isn't even thinking about...
The teenage denial.
Yeah. Alice isn't even thinking about like, and maybe this is problematic, but she's not thinking about Bella's mortality or anything like that. She is like, sorry, Bella's going to turn out one way or another. I've seen multiple futures and every one Bella ends up as a vampire, whether it's from accidents or on purpose. So why don't we just do it on purpose so I can see other futures already? I don't know. Like,
well, that, how can you be even empathetic at that point? You know, like, oh, let's consider the feeling. Like, when you see it, it's like, no, this is going to happen. Like, it is what it is. Like, there's no...
Right.
There's no emotion we can attach to this. You can have emotions about it, but it's going to happen. So we need to prepare for that.
Right.
We find out about Jasper's powers. You know, Bella walks in. She's nervous to meet Edward's parents and his family. And we find out that that Jasper has this, like, power. And he wafts his, like, calming energy around. And I think she knew he could do that, but it was different for her to actually experience it in this situation.
Right. And she kind of like automatically feels like comforted too and stuff. Which it doesn't have to do with touch, does it? It's just like he can just sense it in the room. Okay.
Yeah, he can just expel it.
Oh yeah, because he doesn't offer to shake her hand. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't offer to shake her hand. He's still there. This is what's different than the movie and the book though. So Rosalie and Emmett are gone because Rosalie hates Bella. She does not want to be around it. She does not support this. And Emmett just obviously goes with Rosalie. I don't know if he's necessarily in favor of... I think he's just caught in the balance of not caring one way or another.
Right.
But got to follow his mate. Versus in the movie, you know, this is when Esme's like, we're making Italiano. And Rosalie's pissed because Bella's already eaten.
Which is such a silly thing
no
to get
food.
Mad about anyway. But.
Right. Well, I kind of see, like, we don't eat, we don't cook, and so we're going out of our way to make a dinner, and then she's like, oh, we already ate, and I'd be like, okay, that's cool. Didn't Edward say you were coming over for a dinner? Is that like, did he tell you that?
Right.
And you decided to eat anyways, or what? I don't know. And that's also a little bit older cultural thing, is when someone offers you food, you eat it, whether you're full, whether you're allergic, whether you can't eat it. You still, that was like an older culture thing.
I think also so many times in the movie though, Bella, Kristen Stewart, does say, you know, they're like, oh, are you hungry? She says, yes, it smells so good. And Edward's the one who's like, she already ate. So he's the one who ruins it. Cause it's like, Why would you say that? Just let her do her, like, normal human trying to make it not awkward. Like, let her awkwardly, like, eat spaghetti in front of people? I don't know. Right. Like, I mean, I guess no one really thought about how they were all going to sit around a table and watch Bella eat normal food.
But, that's true. Like, I love that idea. Just everybody sitting there watching her eat.
It's kind of, I mean, so I guess the idea is funny that they put it in there, but it's also kind of like, it shows this weird, it does come off as Bella being rude in the movie when you're like I said, she's technically not, it's Edward the one who's like,
yeah,
but hell yeah, if I ate and I was full and I went to someone's family, I was boyfriend or even friend, and they were like, oh, we're making dinner here, we made you a plate, I would be like, I am so excited to eat this plate. Like, even if I could not touch another piece. I want to know what food
tastes like made by vampires.
Right? I mean, maybe it would be bad, but maybe it'd be delicious. Like, they're naturally good at everything. Maybe it'd be really good food. And, I mean, there's also the issues of Edward's like, Bella already ate. Bella's form of eating in the books and in the movie is picking at her salad. So, you're like, this bitch hungry. She could eat some spaghetti right now. Don't even get it.
Give her Italiano.
Also, just to backtrack a little bit, Jasper, I think, comes off to me more while reading him as more of, like, I want to say golden retriever energy, because he's a lot more, like, open and friendly. He's stiff around her because he does kind of think she smells delicious, but he thinks everyone smells delicious. Fine. But he's still, like,
he's enthusiastic about warm to her. Being a part of this.
He's not the one girl on TikTok who makes the face and, like...
No.
Which is, like, that's how he's portrayed, but he's really warm, and I think that does movie them a disservice, because you go, why is Alice with Jasper if he's like this all the time? Because even once Bella's a vampire, he's, like, still this, like, stiff character, and you think that in the movies they would change that, but anyway, it's just because the movies are bad, guys, and that's
why. It's kind of funny, because, you know, I mentioned being a Twilight purist where I've not seen all of the movies, and it's just kind of funny because a lot of those memes just kind of fall flat for me. I'm like, I don't really get that, because that's not how they were in the book. That's not, and I, you know, I'm smart enough to realize that this is an interpretation of the horrible acting or the horrible portrayal from the movie, you know. So the girl from TikTok that does Jasper, like, she's spot on. I mean, exaggerated, but spot on, versus the Jasper I know. I'm like, why is she doing this, you know? Why is she acting like that? So yeah, we skip right over dinner. There's no dinner. And they're like, there's like a piano, and they're like, oh, you play? And they're like, yeah, Edward plays. And Esme's like, get up there, play. And she makes him play the piano, which we've talked about this before. I believe we talked about it on this podcast. Boys playing instruments is hot, especially in mid 2000s time.
I also just nowadays, want to say, this is such a Mormon experience. You are not a true Mormon if you do not have any kind of musical background at all. Maybe you don't do it still, but, like, it's one of those funny things that, like, every Mormon has a funeral potato recipe, and every Mormon, you can be like, were you in choir? Were you in theater? Do you play a musical instrument? Like, because that is, like,
a lot of it is so, piano.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and, like, I mean, all my siblings and I learned to play the piano. But we also moved on to other instruments, heavily encouraged by our mother, who was also heavily encouraged by her mother, and so on and so on and so on. I have a lot of piano players in my family. So the piano was just, like, it's just such a classic choice, you know? Yeah. Some of the rebel Mormon kids, you know, they learn, like, guitar and stuff like that. Nothing a parent loves more, especially Mormon moms, than having their kid learn a musical instrument so they can perform for the church. And certain instruments are not allowed in the chapel of the church because they're too loud and they are not, like, a reverent instrument,
right,
like guitars. You can play an acoustic softly, but you're not playing electric guitar in there. But you can play piano, or you can sing, and that is something that you will do many times if you were Mormon. And so it's kind of one of those things where it's like, once again, she's like, oh man, I would love to fall in love with a man who could play piano, which, it's a dime a dozen with Mormon boys. But let me tell you, all the cutest boys knew how to do the piano. I remember, and I can't disagree. I remember being like, oh my gosh, they're so musical and beautiful. So and it attractive. Adds a softness to men. And I think it's something that I will say about all of our other books that we have read, because Mac and I have read some books on this break. I wish, I do love a good, scary, hard character like Edward. Like, Edward can kill Bella at any moment. And that is some of the draw, obviously. But I love it when they have as animes put it, a lovely item that makes them softer. And I think piano is always such a nice touch because it's like, you have to be soft with the piano. You have to be gentle with the piano. And it's just that like little thing. They're like, ooh. And then like Max said, it's a, of the time, an instrument playing man. Like,
well, and I don't know if I've ever told you this story. Just going a little bit off track, speaking about the Mormonism and the piano. So my dad has this story. He used to mine uranium out in the middle of the Utah desert. Like, he legitimately lived in the back of his truck. They had a trailer, but they rarely ever used it. And one time they were out there and this Mormon family was out. I don't know what they're doing in the middle of the desert. But they found my dad and his crew and they're like, oh, you must come with us. And this might have been FLDS, to be honest, because it was
probably
out there, you know. And for people that don't know FLDS, that's the one where you hear about, like, all the Netflix documentaries and stuff. Those are, like, the crazies.
Those
where
ones,
Yeah, they're doing... Versus LDS, those guys are a little bit more civilized, a little less sexist, a little less controlling, a little less marrying off their young to elder men in the community. But anyways, basically, the more isolated they are, the likelihood of them being FLDS is a lot higher. So he's out mining uranium in the middle of this desert, and this Mormon family finds him. They're like, you need to come home. And it's a group of men. There's like five of them. Like, you need to come to our home. We need to feed you. We need to take care of you for the night. And they're all like, no, we're a bunch of gross, stinky miners. They were surveyors, and some of them are miners, I guess. And they convinced them somehow, just too awkward to get rid of them, I guess. So they end up going to this house. And they're preparing dinner. And then the father invites them all around the piano. And he says, all right, for dinner, you have to sing for your supper. This is the Mormon tradition. You cannot eat until you sing for your supper. So he starts playing the piano and all the men had to sing to eat. And my dad is not a singer. He doesn't play instruments. He was like the last one to hold out. He's like, what am I going to sing? They're like, just sing anything. And I don't think he even remembers, but he finally sang something and they gave him dinner. And so that was what he viewed Mormons as for a long time. He's like, we do not go to Mormon dinners because they're going to make us sing.
They're going to make us
sing around their piano. But yeah, I mean, that was an identifier in our hometown too. Like, if you went to someone's house, you saw a piano, you're like, oh, they're Mormon. Like, that's just what it was.
Yeah.
My aunt had a piano in her house and she was not Mormon, but she lived in Colorado, and so we'd go visit her, and I hung out with Mormons way more than I hung out with my aunt. And so we go over there and I'm like looking around, I'm like, oh, my aunt's Mormon. She was not.
You're like, she must be if she has this.
She has a piano. So it's just funny. It absolutely is Mormon coded. Let's see. Throughout all of this, you know, we kind of have, so Alice is supportive because she's seen it. She knows it's gonna happen. She knows Bella's gonna be a vampire. She's supportive.
Right.
Jasper is fairly supportive. He's just a good feeling dude. He's happy to be there. Like we said, Emmett is just, I don't think he has a feeling one way or another, but because Rosalie is his partner and she's a bitch and she hates her, he's on her side. And Carlisle's pretty supportive, but Esme is insanely supportive. She's that mother that like wants her son to be happy. Her son's happy with this little human girl and she wants that for him. She wants this to work. And so she's very supportive of all of this. But we do come to a point where we find out that Rosalie is jealous because, you know, here's Bella spending her time with this vampire family when Rosalie would have loved to have experienced her human life.
Right.
And do human things and experience being human from the beginning to the end. And she didn't get that. She had her youth taken away from her. And here's Bella, who's fairly unscathed from life. I mean, the worst thing she had is a flighty mother and a distant father. But, you know, she's never been abused. She's never been sexually molested or raped or anything like that. And Rosalie had a lot of life taken away from her. And here's Bella hanging out with these fucking vampires, wanting to be one of them and not enjoy what she has. So I can kind of see Rosalie having those feelings, that opinion.
Yeah, I think... One, I think it does Rosalie a disservice in her writing that she could have expanded more on the trauma that Rosalie has and how Rosalie had to deal with her trauma as a vampire. And like, that can't be fun,
right?
Because you're already dealing with like this bloodthirst. And then once you finally squelch your bloodthirst, you now have to deal with
your
trauma.
Former life.
Which, I mean, she deals traumatic with her trauma by killing everyone who took advantage of her.
Good for her.
Which is, yeah, it's one of those good for her moments. But there's still trauma involved with that. There's still trauma around that. And so I think it does her a disservice. But instead, whether it's because she's Mormon or not, or she's just an old school white woman, Stephanie Meyers emphasizes the lack of having children is like Rosalie's biggest like loss in her mind, because mm-hmm. she has a husband. She's now married multiple times because they get remarried. Edward jokes later on in the series.
Right.
Or actually, I think he's already joked about it.
I think we've already discussed that. Yeah,
because he's like, oh, I'm going to have to go to another one of Rosalie and Emmett's weddings. And like, so like, she's had the big white wedding multiple times now. She's had everything except children. And Stephanie Meyer emphasizes it as this is her trauma. But I'm like, I don't know. She was like raped by her future husband and his friends while they were intoxicated. And then beaten with an inch of her life. And then was brought back to life by some random vampire.
Right.
That found her in the morgue. Thought she was dead. Oh, no, wait. Emmett was in the morgue. Not her. She was in the hospital. Oh, no, wait. She was in the morgue.
Was she? I don't remember.
One of them was in the morgue. Whether it was Esme or her, I can't remember. It might have been Esme. Because
I feel like Esme was.
He just happened to find a heartbeat and was like, she's mine. Anyway. So I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, I guess it's a teen romance and maybe teens don't give a crap about that, but they should. And
one,
maybe as a teenager, you're like, oh man, not being able to have a kid, that would be crazy. But there are teenagers that have that. So I guess maybe some teenagers understand, but it gives this expectation of young girls who might know that they can't have kids. And it makes them, I think it just puts too much projection onto them.
Right.
Because I don't know if you... I don't want to bring up your stuff, Mac, actually, if you don't want to talk.
No, you can bring... I was literally going to bring it up next. I mean, so I was 12. Was I 12 or 14? Anyways, I've spoken about my history before about, like, the muscularness and whatnot. But basically, my testosterone is out of the roof. And I got tested to see if I was actually hermaphroditic. So instead of having ovaries, I would have had testicles up inside of me. And it came back not. And so that's when people like have this big argument about stuff. I'm like, yo, I got paperwork verified. Right. Female. You know, you can argue with me whatever you want. But that being said, I remember asking them, I'm like, and I was young. So I was either 12 or 14. I think I was 14. I was 14 because that's when I had to do it because of track, because track accused me of being a male running in a female sport.
Right.
So that's why I had to get paperwork proving I was female. So that being said, I remember asking about fertility. I was like, well, since my testosterone is so high, will I be able to have kids? And at the time, I was like, do I even want kids? Like, that was not an occurrence to me. That was my expectation. My expectation was I'm supposed to grow up and have kids.
Right.
You know, and now that I've gotten older and I'm dealing with these fertility issues and things like that, you know, and I've decided that I do want children, I just think back to that moment a lot. I'm like, I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know, you know, because even now as an adult, I've been like balancing back and forth. What's the right option? What's the right choice? But when I was 14, I just knew I was supposed to have kids. That was expected of me. And that was what was the responsibility. There's never a point in my mind where I was like, should I have kids?
Right.
Is it responsible?
Right. Because even in our childhood, like, the picture of a stay-at-home mother was still pretty strong. And
oh yeah, my mom was a stay-at-home mom throughout almost all of our lives,
right? Yeah,
she got divorced.
Yeah, I was raised by, well, once again, I was raised in Mormon culture, so it was a little bit stronger. But I mean, all my friends who weren't Mormon had moms who stayed home and took care of them, so
right.
That further pushed that idea of like, oh, this is what people do. And so what I kind of expected to do. So I just think, once again, we've talked about how Stephanie Meyers, I don't think any writer really thinks about the impact of their book unless they set out to make a book trying to impact people in this way.
Right.
But I don't think she thought about, like, if Rosalie's, like, one trauma about being a vampire is that she can't have kids, that really narrows her down to this really shallow character who, like, thinks that that's the only purpose of a woman. And if you were a teenager who happens to already know, like Mackenzie, that, like, you can't have kids, I don't know. I can see that causing some issues in some young girls. Because we went to a small town school, Mackenzie and I both talked about. I knew at least two or three other girls who already knew in high school that they could not have children when they were older. So just, like, by happenstance, they found out through various medical reasons and research. And I don't know, I can't imagine. And then you read this and, like, the hottest girl in the book is sad because she can't have kids. And then Bella has some miracle baby later on. Spoiler alert. And I don't know. It's one of those things that I don't know. And maybe I'm preaching from my pedestal now as a mother and being like, I don't want to just be reduced down to this thing that has birthed another thing. There's so much more about me. And if I had trauma like this, hell yeah, that would be my bigger trauma and not the fact that I couldn't have kids at all. Or and I don't know.
That's something definitely in that time was something to cope with versus now. Like, I dealt with it fine growing up. Like okay, well, there's a possibility I'm probably just never going to be able to have kids. And, like, I dealt with it fine. But watching media and TV shows definitely made me feel fucked up about it. It's like, no, this is, like, your job. This is what women... This is a man wants to have children with a woman. You know what I mean? And so that was just a really... So, yeah, people reading this and being like, oh, wow, she's being reduced down to a female whose job is to produce a child and she's incapable of doing that.
Yeah.
And therefore, she's useless as a human being.
Yeah. Or especially because she's one of the powerless ones, too. So, like, her, Emmett's, like, crazy strong, which they say they're not really sure if that's a power or not, or if that's just because he was a strong human, so now he's a strong vampire. But, like, everyone essentially has, like, a power except for her and Esme, which also brings me to Esme is also portrayed as a character who is shallow and now has children because she has adopted these children that her husband has made for her.
Right.
And so now she mother hens everyone. And that's her character. That's
her superpower.
That is all she is just this person who pops in to be like, Edward, make sure you're being polite to Bella. And like, kids, make sure to show your manners and stuff like that. And like,
eat your vegetables.
That's her fucking your deer. She's a sitcom mom. She's like, she doesn't do anything for the story. And she's been alive for this long. And you would also think, like, I mean, what's Esme doing? You know, like, she just wants to be a stay-at-home mom to vampires that don't really need her mothering because they're all technically adults. So, like, does she... They don't really need her to mother them. She just gets to live out, I guess, this fantasy forever. She's, like, living in this weird Sims life, I guess. And I can't, like...
She's the fucking Scarlet Witch.
But, like, she... I don't know. Once again, Stephanie Meyer's just, like... She's not always amazing about her side characters unless they're the ones with powers. And it just makes me sad because I'm like, you could have at least put in that, like, Esme went to go tend her garden. Because maybe she's, like, even regular housewives have, like, things like this. Like, what are they called now? Trad wives? You know? Like,
yeah, trad wife. The message you just sent me today about, you know, going... We got Edward and Bella, where we learn about Stinky Bella and...
Oh, yeah. I almost brought that Sparkly. Up, too, while we were talking about other stuff earlier. About how, like, she has this baseline for some really good background of, like, we could talk about Rosalie becoming a vampire. That could be a whole book itself. Alice becoming a vampire could be a whole book itself that I would read because she barely touches on Alice's, but Alice's is like crazy. She could write it as like Alice as a human. And then the second she, you know, Alice can't remember her past life at all because she was in an insane asylum and stuff like that. Like she could write about how she ended up in the insane asylum and why, and like how that all happened and then have her turn into a vampire at the end and then wake up and be like, what's happening? Who am I? Like,
yeah, even Jasper could have, like, you know, a whole, like, historical redemption kind of thing where he's in the South and so he has to be a Confederate and maybe he doesn't have those same feelings. Like, she could, you know, literally
walk him away from that. Yeah, she could expand on so many, and, like, maybe not Emmett because what does he get attacked by a bear? But, like, you could still do, like, expand upon that a little bit in, like, Rosalie's book because he's part of her story. And just, like, talk about how he helps heal Rosalie and stuff like that. I mean, all these people could have these crazy, but instead we are on 327 pages of fluff about Bella and Edward.
Right. Well, and then even the extended books. Well, what's her name? Brie Tanner or whatever? Like the short life.
Oh, yeah, the like, short.
Why did we get that? Why didn't we get Rosalie's story? Why didn't we get Alice's story? We got, I don't know.
Right.
It just seemed like such a weird little plot in there. To be honest, I haven't read it. Maybe it's really good, but I was just like, there's so much.
From what I've read of it, I've thought about reading it just so that I could add it as background to this, because that one lady on TikTok that you and I share, I really we really need to find her handle one day, who's like an avid fan of Twilight. She talks about, I guess in the short life of Brie Tanner, she talks about how she can hear the other vampires making out in the little vampire army and how it sounds like porcelain clicking against itself.
Oh, yeah. I remember her taking the bowls. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, there's things like that in that book that you're like, I'm sorry, what? Like, and it makes you, if you read that and then read the last book of, like, Edward and Bella have, like, sex for 4 days, You're like, did it sound that horrific the whole time? That's clink, awful.
Clink.
Yes. Like, why was this the sound like?
Why did you add? Well, it's like Miss Harry Potter lady adding later that, like,
that there wasn't toilets.
Used to just poop.
Yes.
Yeah, they just poop wherever and then they just magic it away. And it's like, why did... We already had the series, ma'am. We were already done.
I mean, and she had a secret chamber in the bathroom, too. So why would you write that in?
Where did this come from?
Why would you do that? And you made the laws of magic say that essentially matter cannot be created or destroyed, even within magic. So, like, that means that they were magicking the poop to somewhere. Because, like, she says, you can't just, like, make a cake out of thin air. You have to pull the cake from somewhere right. You know the cake is. Like, the kitchen's downstairs. The lack downstairs. Of
story building that could have happened between Malfoy and Harry Potter by sending each other shit.
Dude, right? And were they just setting it on people's doorsteps on fire? Or I just...
Yeah.
Anyway, we cannot talk about this during this book. But anyway, so it's just one of those things that you're like, why would you add that? Why would you bring that up? Why would you talk about it? So sometimes I want to read it so I can bring it up in this. And then sometimes like that, which I brought it up anyway, but sometimes I'm like, that ruins these so much more. I'm so glad I didn't read that book because it came out before the last one.
Did it?
Didn't it?
Man, I don't remember. I feel like I would have been all over
it. I think it was like first book, second book, that book, third book.
Really?
I don't know. Anyway, I'm gonna move us on. Edward's like, yeah, I can play a little piano because there's a big, giant, beautiful piano. And Edward plays the piano and he plays Bella her song. She cries because of the music being so beautiful. And she's like wiping away her tears and he eats one of her tears.
Yeah.
It says tastes her tears and it says that in our thing, but like he did it so quickly she almost didn't notice him do it, but then he says nothing else. She doesn't bring it up again. He doesn't bring it up again, and he just has this like, anyway, you want to see the rest of the house? What? I'm sorry,
just skip right over that.
And like I just almost wish he came back to it, like, why did you taste my tears? I wanted to see if I could taste you a little bit. Like, it was in his head being like, what does she taste like? Just a little bit. Like, I could taste a tear without wanting to eat her, right? Like, he takes so many risks with her anyway, which, like, that's what they are, is risks. He all the time is like, Bella, I would never hurt you and I wouldn't want to. And yet he risks it all the time because, right, like, he made her hike up the mountain, like he does all this, like, reckless shit with her. She could start bleeding at any moment. The fact that it only happens in book two is amazing because how did she not trip and fall and, like, scrape her hand and to blood earlier? Like,
right.
And how is no one else blood in front of Jasper? Because right, Bella's blood school, doesn't even sing, like, to him.
Sports?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a kid who gets a bloody nose. Like, doesn't that count? I don't know. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm just kidding. I'm mad about it now. Because, like, why does he just take these risks with Bella? Like, because what if her tear did taste good to him? Like, what if it's, like, forbidden it water for him?
Like, the blood. Yeah.
And he's like, that tastes delicious.
And he doesn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I imagine the sharks off of Finding Nemo. When he smells blood, the blood, he's like, ooh, that tastes good. Like, what if that happened just right there? Like, I guess his family was around, but still, I just think he takes a lot of risks with Bella, considering that he's like, I would kill myself if I hurt you. And you're like, this bitch really wants to die, I guess.
Prepare,
like,
yourself.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, so move on.
We're going to talk about this a little bit later, but maybe he's tasted tears before. That's a possibility because he did have a little rebellious streak. But I want to talk about that here in a minute because I want to talk about, he's giving Bella a tour of the house and then they stop and Bella kind of smirks and she looks at Edward and he's like, it's a little ironic, I know. And they look on the wall and there's a cross there. And, you know, cross historically are used against vampires to ward them away.
Yeah.
And in this situation, they have it in their house as a symbol. And this is so important to the story that I feel we cover on the surface area with reading, but then when you start to dig deeper into it, you start to realize that this is the main reason behind everything, because Edward is religious. He is a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that it's in the house for nostalgia. And then we go into Carlyle's story. And so we're introduced to Carlyle, who was, what was he, a soldier at first?
Carlyle before? Yep. He was a priest.
Oh, priest, son, you're right.
Yeah. Who the priest hunted right, vampires and witches, and there was another one. Werewolves, I think, was what he...
Yeah, creatures.
Creatures of the sort. Night. And he pretty much kills a lot of innocent people because not real vampires don't get caught by humans. Carlisle was the first to technically catch a vampire.
Right, catch a real vampire yes. that caught him.
Yes, after he took over for his father. But he was a disappointment to his father because he wasn't killing innocents because he believed people when they were like, I'm not a witch. He was like, okay, not a witch.
Must be true.
Yeah.
We're not going to make her float or sink.
Yeah.
We're going to take her word for it.
But yeah, he caught a vampire, which Carlisle says is most likely because the vampire was very old and hungry, or essentially they kind of almost compare it to like a bear. Like, I probably could not easily go catch a bear unless the bear was older or hungry or, you know, some type of way. And so he
weakened in some way.
Yes. So even as a young 23-year-old male who's very healthy and could run fast, he was attacked by the vampire. The vampire turned around to attack the mob. And Carlisle got the brunt of it, and two people died. But I think they end up taking out the vampire in the end.
But for this to work, doesn't he have to, like, drink the blood? How does Twilight vampirism work again? I've already forgotten.
It's just bite. You get bitten. It's just a bite? Yeah. So he's just bitten, and the other people are killed or maimed, and then they are then killed and burned to make sure they don't come back as vampires, which is smart on their end. But Carlisle hides his in some way. It doesn't really elaborate on it.
Right.
But this was in early 1630s, and this is when we find out Carlisle is... How old is he?
362.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's 362 years old, based off of this information Bella's told. She's like, wait, how old is he? So this is where I said that Stephanie Myers had to do some kind of research, because she talks about what age it was and where, and all this stuff about, like, where Carlisle came from. So he makes the cross on the... He made the cross that's on the wall from his... Was it Angelical?
Days.
Yeah, whatever religion they were.
I don't remember what he was. So basically, after Carlisle becomes a vampire, he traverses alone for so long. He's lonely for years. And then that's when he ends up picking up medicine. He starts healing people. What is the 1800s? He comes to a situation during the Spanish flu. And that's when he discovers Edward. Edward has no family. His whole family has died off. And here's this young boy just dying of Spanish flu. And that's when Carlisle decides to turn Edward into a vampire. And so that was his first turning. And he wasn't even sure how it worked on himself. So it was kind of a little bit of a science experiment, because he doesn't remember his own process. And so Edward was his first companion. And then after that is when he bit Esme.
Right.
So his companionship. But at some point in time, and this is what I want to come back to, is that Edward rebelled for a little bit. He didn't necessarily agree with this vegetarian lifestyle. And he went off on his own and he slaughtered people. And that's where I'm wondering if he did taste tears at some point in time. And did he understand that they're as tasty or not as tasty as blood? But I honestly don't think that Stephanie Meyer even thought about that. I think the tear thing was completely fucking random. I don't think she put that much thought into it. But for the sake of things, we could say that he has probably tasted tears before, and he might have known that it wasn't going to trigger him. One of the things I wanted to bring up was the whole angelic thing, and I don't want to go off on a crazy tangent, but during our break, Ashlyn and I saw this TikTok of this guy talking about Mormon angels.
Uh-huh.
And the description of them is exactly as these vampires in the Twilight universe.
Yes.
And it's so funny because we've brought this up so many... Basically, he mentioned every single thing that we've said. We just never put the dots together. We just never connected all of the strings.
Yeah, we just put all the pins on the board, but then kind of left it at that.
Right. And so basically, as far as Mormons' belief go, in their belief in angels is that they're pristine and clean. You can describe it better than I can, Ashlyn, because I only know it from mildly. And then
no,
from
I mean
TikTok.
You're essentially just saying it. They're holy beings that are like beautiful, angelic in nature. Old school biblical angels, multiple eyes, feathers, a terror to behold, you know, kind of things. But pretty much Joseph Smith rewrites it all, and he claims to have seen many angels while writing the Book of Mormon and all that stuff. He also claims to see God and Jesus. all of which are these, they essentially sparkle. Their skin essentially glows and sparkles, like, from within them, as though, like, I remember light always being shown hitting them in the paintings. I don't know if that's something that's specific to him or what, but this is how Joseph Smith describes them, as, like, the glow comes from within them. Like, light comes from within them and comes out of, like, their skin and stuff like that. And they kind of essentially sparkle. They're also, like, beautiful in nature and, like, look essentially like a gorgeous, like, a vampire would. Like, you think if you saw Edward descend from the heavens and you're picturing the most beautiful man, and then sunlight is hitting him, like, in a beam, and he sparkles and glows and stuff like that. Yeah. That's what Morbid angels are. And it's so funny that we talked about how she compares Edward to an angel a lot and all this stuff. And all of a sudden we're like, this guy talks about this TikTok. And all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, she's describing the vampires in this are not vampires. They are angels. She's using angels. Book of Mormon lore, not vampire lore, you know, which is why she throws everything out the window, you know, because I mean, literally, as we're reading about this chapter, we skipped over this page because it's boring, mainly of them going through the house. But she says no coffins, no, you know, like no cobwebs, no skulls. Yeah, like they're making jokes about it, but like everything about vampire lore is thrown out the window, and it's because these aren't vampires, these are angels. She has taken this lore directly from her own religion and has just named the vampires. It really makes you go, did she know? Was she just writing what she knew? Or did she do it on purpose to be like, oh, these are modern day vampires. They're angels. Right. But what if angels had to drink blood to survive or something like that? And they live forever and stuff like that. Which, once again, biblically, there are supposedly people who have been alive since the time of Adam. What's the fucking brothers' names? They talk about it in Cain Supernatural. Yes. I think both of them are supposedly still alive and have never died.
Like, according to Mormon religion?
No, according to religion in general.
Christian.
Yes. But there's some reason. I think they were cursed. I can't remember which one. But they literally talk about it in Supernatural. Yeah.
Cain.
Because they're still alive to this day. Because it's a curse to be alive forever.
Right.
And I think it's supposed to be a tale of, like, it's a curse to live forever and you don't actually want that. And that aging is natural because everything in the Bible should be taken as a story with a lesson to be learned from it. But some people, Mormons included, still have these stories, and some people believe them and believe that there are these people who are still alive. I believe some of Jesus's apostles are also supposedly still alive.
That's interesting. I didn't know that about my religious history is pretty knowledgeable, I didn't know that.
I didn't find this out. Funnily enough, I've read it, and I think I just never put the pieces together, but 100% I learned it from Supernatural and because of Cain or whatever, whoever is still alive. And I was like, why is Cain still alive? That doesn't make sense. But Supernatural believe it, very biblically correct about certain things. And so I remember,
didn't Cain kill Abel?
Yes.
So I guess Cain would be alive.
Yes. So I remember looking it up, and all of a sudden I was like, there's, like, scripture about this, that they were cursed with eternal life. And some were cursed, and some were told to teach the ways of the Lord for eternity. So whether that's a curse or not, I'm never sure. But, which I'm pretty sure it's one of the apostles that was told to teach Jesus' scripture for eternity or something like that. But I'm like, so there's many mentions of these immortal people in the, in the Bible and the Book of Mormon, because they continue on that. And some of the, whether you think they're made up or not, tales in the Book of Mormon, there are also people who are told that they live forever. So it's very interesting that she really just did that. She really just made up angels. And I don't know why it took that TikTok for me to be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, we'll link it in the description so you guys can see the better description of it.
Exactly.
The other thing that I was cracking up about is, and I put this note in my book. So Edward, you know, talks about his rebellious stage and how he slaughtered people and he's drank blood and he's killed people. And he looks at Bella and he's like, does that not frighten you? Does that not terrify you? And she's like, not really. And like, maybe it's the fact that I have my certified monster fucker card. But like, you know, and we talk about this issue of discovery of witches, like, you're a vampire. What do you expect from me. I've made this decision that I'm going to be dating a vampire. I'm going to be with this romantically with this vampire. I'm going to expect that there's some history of violence. I'm not going to think that this vampire has 100% been clean since the beginning. And they even talk about how being a newborn vampire is very hard.
Right.
And I can imagine a slip up. Like, I don't know. She doesn't seem that scared of Jasper either. And he's actively wanting to eat her.
Right.
And so it drives me nuts when I read a vampire book. And the difference here is Bella's accepting. I love that. Bella's like, no, it doesn't really scare me. Versus Discovery of Witches. Oh my God, what is her name? I can't remember it. Dana.
Yeah.
Dana's like, you do that? Oh my God. And I'm like, what the fuck? You're a fucking witch and you've known about vampires your whole life too. It's not like you just discovered they existed.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? He's a vampire. Versus Bella, who is like, okay, yeah, that's what vampires do.
Right.
And Edward's like, aren't you ashamed of me? Aren't you afraid of me? Aren't you? Like,
well, she just says, no, it sounds reasonable because he even describes it as it almost going through his like teen years and his classic adolescent like rebellion.
Right. Your rebellious teenage years.
And so she's sitting there as a teenager being like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, to rebel against my mom.
I'm here hanging out with vampires and my dad doesn't want me to be here.
To rebel against my mom, I moved in with my dad. And now to rebel against him, I'm in your house. So, like, obviously.
I know exactly what it's like. I wear my black goth boots and my black makeup. And you ate people. We're essentially the same.
Same thing.
So then finally we get the tour of his bedroom. And we go into his bedroom and it's stocked with CDs, with music, like, which I think is kind of funny that she chooses CDs because I feel like Edward would be a vinyl person. Even in the mid 2000s, he would be like, oh, I have that on vinyl. And he was around when, so I mean, he could have those.
If this was peak hipster, I think he would have been more insufferable because Edward is the hipster. Yeah. We didn't have this word yet. Like, well, maybe it was around, but like, not like it was when we were like, well, you were out of school, but I was like,
Junior or senior. Hipster trend didn't hit until about 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
Like right when I graduated, that's where all the emos went. The emos became hipsters.
Right.
Myself included.
Right. Edward's the original emo hipster. And this is the modern hipster. But he's just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where's his vinyls?
Yeah. But he's during that time too. You think he'd have them. Like he was there purchasing vinyls when it was the only thing acceptable. But we have CDs, so whatever creative choice Stephenie Meyer made for him to have CDs, he has CDs. And he's playing music for her. And I mean, it really just wants to exemplify, once again, I think it's reverting back to that Mormonism where he's just very musical. Musical in taste, musical in being able to play. And you know his CDs. Does he say what he has? I know in the movie he talks about it, which I can't remember what song it is. But I don't think it mentions in the book other than the fact that he just has a bunch of CDs. But you know they're all classical music.
When he first turns it on. Oh, and she also says it's like a big fancy sound system with like knobs that she feels like she can't touch. Also of its time, now it would be like if he had like thin speakers that were all Bluetooth and like hooked up or something like that, we'd be like, wow, this is a good system. But instead, if you're a 90s kid like me, you're imagining like big speakers with like a CD input and big volume knobs and stuff like that, that you could play with the different bass and stuff like that. Still good. It's just like, it's funny how technology has advanced that picturing this big stereo surround system isn't necessarily the same, I guess, as like now you don't have to see speakers and they're good. Like you can like have this tiny one in the corner and it probably sounds the same as whatever Edward has here. But anyway, when he pushes play on it, it's the soft jazz number.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it must be surround sound because it sounds like the band was in the room with us.
Turns it on. He's like, do you like jazz? Very romantic.
He has them organized by year and then personal preference within that frame.
Lame. Which is like, what a loser.
Such a terrible way to do it, in my opinion.
How do you like, oh, I need to find my favorite jazz singer, and you're like, oh, let me, I'm going to find Dizzy Golubsky, and because he's my third favorite, he's number three CD
in the year,
starting in the
1920 whatever. I don't know who you reference. I don't know jazz singers.
He's not a singer, he's a trumpet player. He's got the big old cheeks.
Oh, okay.
But
alphabetical or nothing. I don't know. Leave in the comments how you would organize your CDs. I would be alphabetical.
How would you organize your CDs?
You know what? I think I would do genre alphabetical. Like, I'd have all my jazz.
I've tried doing that with, like, movies before.
Yeah.
Like, it's just got to be alphabetical, though, at that point. Because then I'm like, oh, did I categorize this as a thriller or a horror? Or is this a horror comedy?
Some of us enjoy movies and don't watch scary things.
Where would you put a rom-com?
In a rom-com.
The romantic or the comedy? You put it in the rom-com section?
Yeah, I have a rom-com section.
So, okay, so it's in the rom-com section. So, like, where... So then I have my straight comedy. So let's say I have like Superbad over there.
Yeah.
And then I have like, what's Mean Girls?
Rom-com.
Rom-com? There's not that much romance in it.
Life? I don't know. Teen movies? I'd probably put it like teen movies.
Oh, well, that's going to be. Yeah. I just do alphabetical because I'm not worrying about that shit.
You're like, I'm just alphabetizing.
Alphabetical all the way through.
I feel like I could do it, but I don't know. Apparently, I don't have all these gray area movies that you do.
You don't have all these subgenres, like.
You know, sometimes you having more knowledge about movies might be a deficit. Like,
trust me, I know.
I just get to enjoy things, and that's fun.
You're just lucky I don't alphabetize them by director. Like,
oh, that would be awful.
So with music, I would do the same thing. Just alphabetical, artist last name, go, band. First letter of band, go. So, like Britney Spears will be by the Beach Boys. I'm not going to figure out fucking names of the Beach Boys. Anyways, coming back to this. there's a moment in here which high school me thought was super hot and adult me thinks is still pretty cute, I guess. I don't know if I'd call it hot because it's weird to say that about 17-year-olds. But
when we were 17, it was hot.
So Bella says to a point, she's like, you're really not that terrifying to me. Like, you're really not that scary. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he crouches back in like a tiger pose and then pounces on her. And before she can even see that this all happens, he's like attacking her. Is it on the bed? Do they have beds? They don't sleep. I think it's on a couch.
Yeah, there's a leather sofa in the corner or whatever.
Yeah. And so sitting there, he's like, what about now? And she's like, oh, yes, you're absolutely terrifying. And like, I'm like sitting there like, oh, my God. It's so hot. And this is when Alice walks in. Well, she knocks on the door. She's very polite. She knocks on the door. She's like, can we come in? And Edward pulls her up into his lap, which I know I would have been so awkward about that. Like, my family, I'm still awkward about that. Like, my husband tries to hold my hand around his family, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're going to see us holding hands.
They're going to know we're married and in love.
Yeah. So, I mean, on a personal note, I'd feel weird about sitting on his lap. But, you know.
As a teenager, me wouldn't have been able to handle it. Now, I don't really care. But
yeah,
teenager me probably would have. I don't know. We're fast forwarding everything in their relationship. And at the time, my boyfriend I did have in high school, I did do these things in front of his family and often not think much about them. But I had known him a while. First meeting, no. But right. We have to remember, even though they've only said I love you 2 days ago and had 5 conversations. They are in love, so.
Well, and Edward's never said he loved her yet, because I have that marked in my book, and that's coming up, but that's not now.
Oh, he hasn't.
Only Bella has said she loves Edward in her sleep, not to him directly. Yeah, we'll talk about that, too. So, anyways, then this is when Alice comes in, and she's like, hey, there's a thunderstorm tonight. You know what that means. And Edward's like, baseball? And it means, yes, 100% baseball. And so they're going to play baseball, and this is going to be the climax of our story, is... the baseball scene, or the introduction to the climax, I guess.
Which is, I mean, somewhere I'm going to have to post on our socials how much of the book we have left, because it's just, if you've read this book, you know how much, like, happens, and it's just like, how is this? This is 70% of the movie, and it's only, like, not even an inch of the book is left.
Pining.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? So the baseball scene's not even the climax of this. The baseball is actually the inciting incident.
Yes.
Which the inciting incident, if you know anything about plot development, you have exposition, which is the introduction of the characters, the location. That's it. Introduction of characters, location. And then you have the inciting incident, which rolls off the whole story. This is the true inciting incident, is this baseball scene. I mean, all of everything we've had is exposition, the development of Edward and Bella's relationship.
Right.
We didn't even really get this plot development yet. There has been no plot. The plot has been
right.
Edward and Bella.
We've also just, I mean, once again, we skimmed over it. during, right before the piano scene, we had the, what's that called? The smoking gun or something like that? Or like, it's not the smoking gun. When you see a gun in the beginning of a movie and you're like, ugh.
Oh.
They're going to use that.
Foreshadowing,
yes. So we've already had the foreshadowing, actually, where Edward and Carlisle exchange a glance. And after Edward's done playing the piano, Bella's like, hey, what were you talking to Carlisle about? Because obviously he reads minds. And he's like, oh, you saw that? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, there's going to be some visitors of right. our kind coming into town, but they're not going to actually come into town. It looks like they're just going to hit the outskirts and then leave. And he goes, so I'm so sorry if I'm extra protective the next couple of weeks. I won't be comfortable until they're well on their way. And she's like, oh, okay. Right. And he's like, but Alice has seen that they won't come into town. And so she's like, right. okay, cool. And like, that's it. But that was the foreshadowing. It's such a like skimmed over thought. A quick but nod. So chapter, whatever, 340 pages in is when we hear about what's right. the whole book.
So the story was kind of told backwards. We have exposition and then we have rising action. And then we have our inciting incident.
Right.
Which your inciting incident usually is before the rising action. So we have this like weird creation. And honestly, maybe romances kind of work like that. I'm going to have to look into some romance films and start diagramming their plot diagrams and see. Because my knowledge is mostly with horror and with action. And that's just not how a plot diagram works. But perhaps romances do, because romance is not my strong suit of knowledge.
Now that you say it, and as someone who consumes a lot of romance.
That's very true. But they're like fantasy romance.
I mean, I guess that kind of adds a difference to it. But I'm thinking just like, let's say classic romance, Pride and Prejudice. Right. Yeah, there's not really... if you can call it a climax, but there's not really a climax until towards the end of the movie, which right. I'd say you're like 3/4 of the way through the movie when he proposes to her, which is kind of the climax, but it's actually just them building up to the climax because she says no. And then that builds to the climax of them being like, wait a second, we actually do want to get married, even though we both said no. And yeah, which...
Right.
Saying it out loud makes that movie sound so silly. That movie is a treasure, okay? And it is beautiful. And I love reading all the TikToks and the articles about how it uses the female gaze in such a beautiful way. And that's my defense for Pride and Prejudice. It's my defense. But saying it out loud about how, what the plot is, I'm like, wow, that's so stupid. But you know what?
Let's see.
I've done 9 episodes about how stupid this fucking romance is. So.
Well, so we're 9 episodes in. Then everything happens so quickly. So we haven't really plotted out our next episode yet. But we are almost done. Like, I mean, it's so funny that we took this big of a break this close to...
life happened, guys. But, you
know, I was going to say, it just fell during... I wish I would have... We could have finished all of this before Christmas, because Christmas really just kind of threw things off with family and life and everything, and then just getting started back up again.
Yeah.
And then my schedule changed, too, with work.
I was going to say, Mac so had just... work schedule changes. I started work. I had a family death. We had holidays. It just was like one thing after
another. We have lots of excuses.
We have lots of excuses.
We understand. We understand that you understand that life happens. But the whole reason I bring that up is it would have been so nice because I think we're only 2 episodes away. Like,
I agree.
This episode 10 is going to be, and you know, I say that when we're sitting here, we talked about the fucking house for like 45 minutes, but
yeah, but once you cut that down.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, we really are going to talk about the baseball scene, the visitors. And then that's where everything hits. I mean, we got, like, the chase. We got them dealing with the ballet studio. And then the resolution. So we're really not that far off from the ending here.
I wouldn't doubt it if we break it into baseball scene and being hunted. And then ballet scene resolution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm thinking 2 episodes. Like, honestly,
I think
because really think we should work on... the baseball scene is very short. The most we're going to have to talk about it because it's such a because of the movie has become like
so iconic.
Yes, it's an iconic part. And the fact I cannot wait to read it because are they wearing baseball uniforms?
Because oh my god, I don't
what a decision
know.
To make in the movie. And I mean hilarious because when they like go to attack the other vampires and they're like snarling in each other's faces, they're in baseball uniforms, which is
and like old timey
hilarious.
Like,
yes, so hilarious. Which I mean, literally, where we're ending right here, Bella says, "I rolled my eyes. Vampires like baseball? It's the American pastime," he said with a mock solemnity. I don't know how to say that word, but he's like, "It's the American pastime," which, like, you know, I'm gonna agree. It's like there's nothing more American than baseball. Baseball, hot dogs, and hamburgers. You can't get more American than that, okay? All right.
Hot dog.
Nothing makes me feel more fucking patriotic than a baseball movie. So I am team, this makes sense, okay? It's like, if there was English fucking ones, they'd probably play soccer or cricket or some shit, okay?
Right.
And it would be
I was going to bring us up that line about baseball. Did you ever read The Bailey School Kids?
No. Those are the guys that like, grew up in the train, right?
No, that's the Boxcar
okay,
Children.
Okay.
But along same reading level, same like I don't want to say same plot line or anything, but definitely that age level when you're going in and you're like, I need to grab a series of books. You got like Boxcar Children and you got Bailey School Kids.
Right.
So Bailey School Kids is actually kids that go to school and then their teacher or somebody who works at the school is always something supernatural.
Oh wait, I have read those. Okay. I just didn't know they were called School Kids.
And so there's a vampire one. It's called Vampires Don't Play Baseball. And it just cracks me up. I made a tweet about it a long time ago. Like, this is Twilight. And so that's what... I mean, she says something about that. That's immediately what I think of. Vampires like baseball? Like, that's a Bailey School Kid title.
I think I've read the Vampires Don't Like Baseball ones. And there's, like, a witch one that I read.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of them. I think the first one is Vampires Don't Wear Polka Dots. And it's not always about vampires, but just so happens there's a couple about vampires.
It's so funny.
And I loved those books. I read so many of them.
Yeah. So I'm thinking 2 more episodes. I would love to move on. Maybe next episode or the last episode we'll decide what we're going to read next so we can hype you up. Genuinely, my ultimate goal, personally, and I have talked to Mac about this, is I really would love to get the books done in 2 to 3 episodes. Yeah. Some books, totally 2 episode worthy. Some books, like Mackenzie during our break, did read Fourth Wing. If you're a Fourth Wing reader or listener, I think we're definitely going to have to maybe talk about that sooner rather than later. Maybe not next, but I guess it's not vampires, though, if you want to keep on theme. But Fourth Wing, what a ride. What a ride as far as paranormal romances go. And I guess it's just a fantasy romance. And I guess we don't do specifically paranormal. We do more fantasy romances. But damn, Fourth Wing, the second book, I think we would have to do 4 or 5 just because of how the plot works out. The book one, I think I could do in 2, maybe 3. The second book, we're going to have to do it like 6.
That's her own fault. That is Rebecca Yarros' own fault.
This is my hopeful estimate is like 5. Like, just because of the way she wrote the plot, we are going to have to break it up. Because otherwise, listeners are going to be confused. Even if you have read the book, you're going to be like, you just skipped over the most important part of the book. But there's so many most important parts of the book, of that stupid fucking book. So, that we love, I'm going to... that's all I wanted to say is that I wanted to end on the note of Mackenzie and I love these books and enjoy these books. All the ones we are going to talk about for the most part are going to be books that we genuinely enjoyed and read and were like,
I was gonna say, I don't think I'm gonna bring up a book.
Second Fourth Wing book, I'm gonna be the naysayer and say I did not like the second Fourth Wing. The first one though, pleasantly surprised, and I thought it was a delight to read. Discovery of Witches, do not like the third one, but the first and second were books worth reading. First one was a book so good that I wanted to read the second one. So, it's going to be interesting to revisit them and then re-gripe about them because I don't know. And I hope we find our community out there who wants to listen to us complain about books we enjoy.
We might make a poll somewhere. This is where I'm going to drop this invite right now. So I'm going to put in our description, I'm going to put a link to that TikTok, but I'm also going to put a link to my Discord. In my Discord, we discuss books in there a lot of the times, and people come in and complain about it. Enter it at your own discretion, because there might be some spoilers. We kind of have spoilers tags and things like that. But you can actually join the conversation, and I might actually put a poll on there for Fangs and Bangs specifically, or something else that we might do is eventually make this Patreon that we keep talking about and put a poll in there, and you guys can vote on the next book that we talk about.
Yes.
So I will put a link in there.
We'll at least narrow it down.
But yeah, I'm almost wondering if we should make our own Fangs and Bangs Discord, but I just feel like I have too many Discords at this point in time that I'm running, and I don't think.
Right.
Maybe if we get a big following, we'll make our own Discord.
Right.
But for now, you guys can go into that one. And so, and that's it.
That's it.
That's the end of the episode.
That's how we end the episode. Just you cut it after you say, and that's it. And then it's, yeah.
That's it. And just cut it.
Anyway, guys, have a good week. Welcome back. We hope you start listening again and didn't forget about us. But we'll start posting again. You'll be like, oh yeah, these guys exist. So yeah. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.